everybody, and welcome to River Talk, hosted by Priscilla Macy, Zach Collier, and me, Eric Weissa. This week, our big topic is talking about an article that we read recently about your gear and keeping it clean. But first, just any news of the week. So, Zach, Priscilla, anything you want to talk about?
Yeah, I have news. Do you want to go first, Priscilla?
No, you go first.
Okay. So, a few episodes ago, we talked about one boat trips a little bit. And I got into online discussion and saw that the people we were talking about, we were kind of harsh with, and maybe we weren't super nice to them. And so I just want to apologize if we were. It's a guy, his handle is Death Angle Whitewater. And so just want to apologize if we were kind of rough. I think sometimes we talk on the show, we're still new to podcasting, we don't realize people are listening to it. And we're just kind of having a conversation. And yeah, I re-listened to the show this morning, and we were a little bit harsh. I want to apologize. I do personally feel like one boat trips are a bad idea. And so I think that I'd like the audience to know that safety-wise, it's not something I personally feel that we should do or the boaters should do, especially on a river like the Wind. So I definitely stand by what we were talking about, but I apologize for being so harsh, and hopefully they'll keep listening to the show, and we'll try to not be mean to people.
Yeah, Zach, stop being mean.
I know. Well, hey, remember how you made fun of all the river guides? That wasn't exactly nice.
Oh, no. I wasn't making fun. Oh, okay. I identify with most of those groups.
You stereotyped the river guides.
I did. Non-PC Priscilla. We're working on that.
That was brutal. But but those guys, I want to say, I'm watching their video. I love their passion. I love the fact they're getting out there. They're having adventures. Their adventure down the Wind, that was a true adventure. It was guys who hadn't seen the river, and they were getting out there, seeing something new, challenging themselves. I'm all for that. Totally excited. I just think the general boating community, we should not be doing one boat trips. And that's just a pet peeve of mine that I know not everybody agrees with.
Yes. Cool. So I have just some event news of the week and upcoming for spring. So this Saturday, we have Wild Rivers Night in Bend, which Zach is helping organize. And we have a few speakers. Should be just kind of a fun night of talking about rivers, having beers, and hanging out in Bend. So that's at 7 this Saturday at Tumalo Creek Kayak and Canoe in Bend, Oregon. So if you're around and looking for something to do, it's a good event. And it supports Coalition for the Deschutes. Is that the correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Coalition for the Deschutes, which is a neat nonprofit that helps protect a lot of the values of the Deschutes River area.
It is sold out. So if you want to go, you might show up and you might not be let in.
Okay, that's fair.
But
there's usually people that don't show up, though, is what. So
yeah.
I guess if you live in Bend, Don't plan on making the trip unless you live in Bend and you're looking for something to do. Just swing by and see if people didn't show up.
Yeah.
So there's that. The Upper Wind Whitewater Festival and Greg Senior Memorial Race is scheduled for March 16th. As most people know, it's a very level dependent, condition dependent race. So that's the slotted date, and there's generally a holding period of a couple weeks when we're just kind of waiting for water levels to fall into the right realm. And then the Northwest Creeking Competition, which is Canyon Creek, Washington, and East Fork Lewis, Washington, is scheduled for April 13th, 14th. And that's one of the bigger whitewater festivals in the Pacific Northwest that's kind of grassroots, fun to attend for all levels and spectators. So April 13th, 14th. And I do believe that they are renting cabins again this year, and they'll post details about that. So if you have a family or whatever, you just don't want to be in the rain, there will be a limited availability of cabins, and they'll post those details soon. Otherwise, you're just camping out with the rest of the group, which is always fun. I think that's it for the events.
Yeah, lots, cool. Lots going on. It's almost spring and festival season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's on that note, it's also permit season. So now's time to apply for your rogue permits, your Idaho Three Rivers, all your Utah Rivers, all that kind of stuff. Now is the time to get your applications in. Not that anyone's there actually reading them or receiving them or doing anything with it. But hope is the federal government will be open sometime in the reasonably near future. And, you know, when permit season, when those lotteries do come up, there'll be people there to actually do them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, now is the time. So if you're looking, you know, start thinking about the summer, start thinking about those trips you want to get on and get your name in the hat.
Cool. Yeah.
I heard a rumor that some of the people in the BLM and the Forest Service are working free of charge right now to help keep the permit system going. Has anybody heard about that?
Oh, I know with the Forest Service, I've gotten a few emails from staff that they will get fined if they work.
Wow.
I don't know about the BLM, but I know the U.S. Forest Service, if they email a phone call from a government line or anything like that, I was told that they would get a daily fine.
Yeah, there's certain employees in the layoff thing where, you know, they've been required to keep working for free. But if you're not one of those people, from my understanding, you're not allowed to work.
Yeah.
So it kind of is what it is, was my understanding. But, you know, a lot of those systems now are on rec.gov, so they don't actually do anything really with them until it's time to do the lottery, like until the day of the lottery. They're not actually doing things.
So you can still get your application in.
Right. So you can still get your application in and do all the stuff. You know, the question is, if the government's not open on the 1st of February, you know, nobody's going to be there doing anything with that stuff.
Yeah.
So, it'd be nice to have Forest Service and BLM back in the office doing permit stuff and all those kinds of things. Because I know for us, like, we're in a permit renewal right now and nothing's happening. And that's a bummer.
Yeah, it's not scary yet. If this goes on for another couple weeks or a month, it starts getting scary for our businesses.
Yeah, well
and everyone.
I think, you know, the point I've made a few times is, like, this doesn't have a huge impact on me personally today.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, if it went on another couple weeks, it would start to. I feel awful for the people, you know, these employees who aren't getting paid. I'm sure it has a huge impact on their life. But if this happened in July,
yeah, terrible.
This would be catastrophic.
Yep.
It would end all of our main salmon launches. It would end all your middle fork launches. It would end all the rogue launches because there'd be nobody there doing the permits.
Yeah.
It would be catastrophic if this was in the middle of the summer.
Not only for our businesses, but for also the local communities who depend on tourists, and then the people who book tickets to fly around the country to do these trips. It would be hard. And I'm sure there's trips now other places. I don't know what they are. Maybe there's like ski trips or there's other things where people are having to cancel vacations because of the government shutdown now.
Well, certainly, like the Smithsonian stuff being closed.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Yeah.
So
now ski areas are open, and ski areas a lot of times have Forest Service permits. So,
well, but it's so, like, if their closure happened, I would still be able to run the North Umpqua. I would still be able to run the Owyhee. I'd still be able to run, like, those rivers where you're not meeting a ranger and getting a permit issued to you every time you launch.
Yeah.
You can still go do. It's the ones where you have to check into an office and get a permit because they have a daily allocation launch.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones that end up getting shut down.
So do you think the main salmon would get shut down if the government was closed?
Yes.
They would just say, you can't go.
It's happened.
Yeah.
It's happened in the fall.
Hmm.
Yeah. There was a rogue. It happened like at the very end of the season, like 2 or 3 years ago. And they said no launches on the rogue.
I don't remember that, but... I don't do trips in the fall.
It was the very end of the season, I think. Okay. So it was like 2 days. You know, it was like the last 2 days of the season or something. Yeah. So it didn't really matter. But it was a big issue a couple years ago. Maybe somebody can email us because they had experience with it. But like Grand Canyon National Park Service stopped issuing permits for the Grand.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it can be a bad deal. All right. Well, should we move on to our main topic of the day? Zach, do you want to go ahead and introduce it?
Yeah, this is an article that Eric, you emailed me a couple days ago to talk about, and it's about the Clean Land Principle. And the article is written by Mark Hurst, who was a guest of ours a couple weeks ago talking about the International Rafting Federation. And Mark, if you don't remember his introduction, he travels the world and teaches guide classes. He's involved heavily with the International Rafting Federation. He's a pretty safety-first guy. And this is something that I think people talk about around the rest of the world more than here in the U.S. And so we want to talk about this article. I'll put a link to the article in the show notes. But the Clean Land Principle essentially states, and I hope I get it right, that you shouldn't have just random ropes or carabiners or non-locking carabiners, things that can cause an entrapment on your body or potentially in your boat somewhere that can cause some sort of entrapment. And we all know we're not supposed to do this, but I think that the whole idea with the Clean Land Principle is that we shouldn't be doing it even around like our waist or things that are on our body, especially too, that are commonly accepted right now. Does that sound about right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the big principle is just don't have things you get caught in, mm-hmm. You know, on you or near you in the river. And so, you know, the one that he brings up is like tying flip lines around your waist, mm-hmm. You know, having non-locking or locking but open carabiners on your life jacket, hanging off your life jacket, having long loose tow tethers, you know, on your jacket, throw bags that have loops at the end that you could actually get your hand through, which was an interesting one I never really thought about. I'm sure there was other ones.
I wish the Clean Land Principle was actually a written principle. You know, it's this thing that is being talked about more and more, especially since this article came out. This article is blown up. It's everywhere. I keep running into it on the internet. And so I'm really glad it's out there. But I wish it was like a 2 or 3 sentences. It was an actual principle in writing. It's more right now just a couple of blog posts and us talking about it.
But this is your chance, Zach.
I don't think I'm the right person to do it because I've worn those waist belts, those waist flip lines forever. Nice. I've been that's been my like go-to thing. And I know a lot of people I work with swear by those things that you have to wear it around your waist. And I just recently talked to Mark about this and he explained to me that we shouldn't be wearing them, which I guess makes sense. I mean, I've always worn mine pretty tight. And so I can't imagine it getting caught on a tree even if I swam. But I also have noticed people wearing them and they're hanging down, you know, like baggy jeans around their waist, you know. So I think that not everybody has tight flip lines around their waist. And so he suggested this Blue Water Ropes flip line thing that I bought one and tried it out. And I assumed that went around your waist too. So I wore it that way. And I talked to him some more. And I guess a really smart place to put it is in the pocket of your life jacket. And so I have an Astral Blue jacket I wear a lot. And so I'm carrying that in one of those little side pockets. And which I'm glad. It's actually pretty cool. I never really thought to bring a smaller piece of webbing and shove it in a little side pocket.
Wasn't the other thing that he said with those is that you roll it up and stick it between your body and your life jacket?
Yeah,
I think was what they said in that article, which sounds pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah, that doesn't sound awesome to me. I think if I'm guiding class 5 where I'm going to need to get it quickly, I would probably maybe do that. I have no idea. It just seems like it might fall out if I swim. And then I'm swimming with a rope near me that isn't attached to anything, but still a rope.
Yeah.
I really like the pocket idea. The front pocket of my life jacket, I don't think I would put it in there because I have so many other things like sunscreen and lip balm and a camera and I don't know, snacks. And it just would be in my way all the time. But again, if I was guiding a really hard river, maybe I would want it there quickly accessible.
Yeah. So I think he mentioned it at the end of his article saying that, you know, it's everyone's kind of personal decision and up to your skill set type of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think the main thing that stuck out to me is not recommending the cowtail. And for me, that seemed to be more relevant to like the everyday river guide, I suppose, that doesn't really need one. But as a kayaker, like I'm always going to continue to wear my cowtail, especially since it's in a releasable system. Like there's no situation where I'm not going to be able to get out of that. And
yeah, that was one in the article I was confused by too, because he made a comment about how, you know, a lot of them are on one or two ends or attached to a, you know, hard thing that can't release.
And then you should never
be doing
that.
And on my system, both ends release. Yeah, exactly. I was confused by that.
Yeah. And it's like what we were talking about with the throw bags, like unless you know how to use the tool, and this is something that we always taught at like the rescue classes that you and I went to, Eric, and also at OSU, like anytime a student would ask like, oh, should I go buy a rescue vest? Usually my answer would be like, well, are you planning to, like, are you going to know how to use it if you're in a situation where you need to release it? And if the answer is no, or like, I'm not going to spend the time to practice it or learn how to use the tool, like, don't do it, because it's not, it's more of a hazard to you, just like not knowing really how to use a throw bag would be. And I think, like, there's, especially with, you know, whitewater kayaking, having a tow tether, like if a boat's getting away and moving flat water, is super valuable, especially if you're the only one, being able to retrieve a boat. Or we just had an instance on the South Fork Chetco where someone swam and it was in a, the boat ended up in a moving pool, and there was like four of us trying to corral this boat full of water, and we couldn't do it until we got a tow tether on it and then just paddled it over to the eddy. But it's like, if that boat ended up being a hazard to me, I can just release my belt and I'm totally fine. To me, what, which obviously is not, like, people aren't going to not wear spray skirts. Like, spray skirts are way more of a hazard for getting caught on stuff and you not being able to get out of them than a tow tether or anything that's in a releasable system. And there's obviously been horrible tragedies that have been associated with people getting stuck on debris and not being able to get out of their spray skirt.
You said spray skirt, like the thing you wear kayaking?
Yeah.
Don't you have to wear a spray skirt?
That's what I'm saying. So I think,
but if you're swimming, they become a huge hazard.
Okay.
Right,
got it.
Right. So no, like, and nobody brings that up because,
well,
like,
you have to wear it. There's no choice. You can't kayak without it.
Yeah. So it's just, it's an interesting argument that I've seen made a number of times that these tow tethers are a hazard, but it just, it doesn't really stand up to scrutiny in my opinion, because it's part of a releasable system. And that's something that is often taught in rescue scenarios, is when you're in a scenario where it's kind of hazardous, like, make sure you're a part of a releasable system, like in live bait, make sure that you can get out if needed, or towing a boat or whatever.
Priscilla. Well, and then I think a lot of those now, they're making them so that, you know, either the bulk of the system is in a side pocket, like on the green vest, you know, where it tucks into that pocket on the side. Mm-hmm. So it's not really out where you're swimming with it exposed, except for like an inch of it, right, kind of on your back. Yeah. You know, or Kokatat's made one that's sort of the same thing. Like, it sort of tucks into the side and it's not out there flapping around. So they've done a good job of, I think, getting those enclosed so that you've really reduced the likelihood of it getting caught if you're swimming. But I totally agree. And from a kayaking scenario, the number of times that has, like, saved us chasing boats for miles, you know, being able to clip it, tow it to the side. Like, I, you know, having somebody have to go scamper down the cliffs after their boat because their boat went 2 miles because you couldn't get it over to the side, that seems pretty dangerous as well.
So do you guys always wear a tow tether when you kayak?
Most of the time, yes. I didn't wear one. We were on the Little Salmon last year and I didn't have it on. Somebody swam and it took me for days to get their kayak pulled over. It was a pain in the I was wishing, I was like cursing myself not having it, you know what I mean? But yeah, most of the time if I'm kayaking, I probably have one.
And the groups you go with, does everybody wear one? I mean, is it kind of standard procedure with the people you guys paddle with?
I would say most people. I'm thinking one, so our buddy Joseph Hatcher is really, he's really for the waist, like flip line scenario. And he wears his like super, super tight. And he says that we've emailed back and forth, he prefers that. And we haven't really kind of figured out exactly why, compared to the tow tether, but I think it's just a personal thing. Like, I think he perhaps grew up and got used to having that. And so it's what's most familiar and accessible to him, where a tow tether is a newer thing. But I would say most people that I paddle with that paddle harder whitewater have the rescue releasable belt and the tow tether, or like a piece of webbing and a carabiner attached to the releasable system.
Eric, how do you feel? Same?
Probably. You know, I think probably most people that I would boat with are going to have a tow tether. You know, especially if you have one that's like a commercially made one that has the sort of elasticity to it, so it sucks itself in, so it's not out there exposed. But yeah, I think most folks I would boat with tend to have them.
Cause most people I boat with don't
When they're kayaking.
When they're kayaking.
Rafting, I think if you're rafting, it's a different deal.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm going to make a statement here. As a rafter, you shouldn't wear one. There's no reason a rafter should wear a toe tether.
Unless you're doing the lower salmon and you want to attach yourself to the raft when it's really windy. Water. Yep.
Oh, so you can like jump out and swim with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Turn yourself into a sea anchor against the wind.
Okay, I mean, that's... Yep. Got it.
It's awesome.
But yeah. Other than that, there's no practical reason a rafter should have one. Whenever I see river guides with toe tethers, I'm like, really? Like, what's the point? I don't even think that river guides should necessarily have the rescue vests.
So one argument that someone made, I was having a conversation with somebody about this recently. They were specifically talking kind of like high water up here on the salmon. And let's say you flip a boat, somebody takes like an oar to the head and gets knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
And you're swimming in high water. The only way that you're going to be able to go anywhere or do anything, like even have a chance of helping them and accomplishing anything, is if you have a tow tether that you can clip to them and then actively swim with them behind you. Otherwise, you have no course of action.
Wait, what? Wait, so you're saying if somebody gets hit in the head with an oar.
Let's say you end up all out of the boat.
Okay.
And you've got
a boat flips.
Unconscious.
Okay.
Floating.
Uh-huh.
You cannot do anything for them except go grab them, hold their head up, and float with them.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or, like, they pop their shoulder out and can't actively swim. There's another one.
But you,
there's
you
not
need
much
a...
you can do for them. If you have that tether, you could clip it to them and then actively swim and try and tow them versus being able to just do nothing.
Well, yeah. If you had a second boat, the boat could get them.
Well, unless it's picking up other people or it's further. I mean, there's all sorts of scenarios, right? Yeah. It's just a tool that you would have that you otherwise wouldn't have.
Yeah.
That's the only positive. That's the only real reason I've heard from a river standpoint. I'm not sure I wholly buy into that one.
I think the other thing too
was interesting
is having like, you know, losing a paddle or whatever and then jumping out of the river and just using the carabiner that can go around the paddle shaft. Like say, you know, a paddle raft, whatever, you lost a bunch of gear, being able to clip to some of that gear and swim it back to the boat in like a non-sketchy scenario is valuable too. But I think also like the basic thing for me too is if you're river guiding and you do both kayaking and river guiding, like I'm not going to buy two life jackets to do either activity, and I'm probably not going to take my toe tether off every time that I'm raft guiding because I know how to use it and I know how to release it. So I think that's like if you're just a raft guide and like you just want like one is like buying a non-rescue vest is way cheaper. So if you're not someone that's really going to need to use that or you're never going to be in a live bait scenario, then you probably don't need a rescue vest. But being able to do live bait or those sorts of things, you need to have a rescue vest because you have to be able to release from the system.
Have you guys ever seen in a rafting scenario live bait?
I was just going to ask you that question.
It just never happens. We talk about it, but realistically, in rafting, you'll send somebody down to the bottom of a rapid with a throw bag to run safety, but there's never anybody on live bait ready to go. I just don't think it's a realistic thing as a rafter even.
No, I think for rafting, if it's coming to like getting gear out of a weird eddy or something, I've seen that happen. And like, you don't want the person to also get stuck in the weird eddy. So they'll just jump in the eddy and then you pull them out while they grab a paddle or whatever.
So you've seen live bait used to get gear.
Yeah.
Wow.
A couple times.
What,
and
mean,
it's
what
usually
because,
like, you
what
can't...
What kind of gear are we talking about? I get that you're releasable. I get that live bait is pretty much safe, but it's not infallible. Like, when you release your rescue vest, the straps can get caught up, so there's always a slight chance it doesn't release. So I'm somebody who's not a huge fan of being on live bait unless I'm going to help somebody. You know, so if it's a paddle or some piece of gear that isn't that important, I would just let it go. Like, okay, cool, we can't get it. I'm not going to put somebody on live bait to get equipment unless it's
Well, think about, like, a kayak. Like, if you're in a spot where someone can't hike out, they swam, their boat got stuck in an eddy.
Yeah.
If you just get someone's hand on one of the grab loops, you can pull it out of the eddy. That's – I've certainly been a part of one of those scenarios where the boat was just stuck in an eddy against like a tall cliff, and there's not really a realistic, I mean, you could hike out, but it would be horrible. And so doing that kind of is a safety thing. Like,
but was that commercial guiding or was that private boating?
No, that was private boating. Okay. I think in commercial boating, the example I think of is when I had a flip at Powerhouse on the Rogue at somewhat high flows. I think I determined the cutoff, didn't I, Eric? No?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. But we flipped a raft and there was this guy stuck on a rock that was kind of in a weird spot, and he obviously didn't want to jump in the river. And I was thinking like, oh, it'd be great if I could, like, you know, if he jumped in the river and kind of freaked out, like if I was able to get in the river with him and like be certain that I'm not going to float downstream, leaving the rest of the people in the raft, like on shore. Like, I figured out another way to do it, but I was like, oh, this would be one of those scenarios where live bait would actually be a really good option if I had like someone else with me. And that actually was a two boat trip. I figured you're going to say that's a one boat trip, Zach. That was a two boat trip. And the other guy ended up going downstream to get one of the swimmers.
It's nice to have a second boat.
It was, but it didn't really help me with the bigger issue that I had. Which was like the four people that were in this weird eddy and kind of freaking out. But
that's why you need a third boat.
Oh my God. Well, if you want to start paying to fill the boats. No, I'm just kidding. But I think there's a few, like it's rare scenarios where having that tool is going to be valuable. But I think in some of those rare scenarios, it's going to be like really valuable. If that makes sense.
I think we're getting caught up now on tow tethers for I want to get back to Clean Land Principle.
Okay.
But I just want to ask a couple quick questions on this that are pointed. Do you admit that tow tethers, having them adds a slight bit of danger? Like, they're not infallible.
Well, no, but neither is like a life jacket, right?
No, I get it. Like, I get it. I just want to admit that like having a tow tether versus not having it adds a tiny bit of danger.
Yeah, but I would consider it like the same amount of danger as your like seatbelt failing in your car or something like that.
So small.
Yeah.
So like but the benefit of having it for you outweighs the extra potential danger that they could have.
Yeah. Just like wearing a seatbelt in a car does.
Okay. And then have you also seen people with tow tethers that you look at them and like, wow, that is not safe at all?
Yes.
Yeah. For definitely. Sure.
So I think a lot of times we talk about safety and things, and I know that you guys know how to, you practice with them, you have very safe ones. I think what happens is then other people think they need to have them and they start doing things that are sketchy, like big long ones that are hanging down or their tail. When you have your safety vest, the tail sticking out should only be a couple inches. If it's a foot long, it's more likely to bind in the release. And so people don't know.
Well, it's the same thing we talked about with like the strangle straps. Yeah. Right on your raft. If they're done right, they're a great tool that actually is really helpful. If they're done wrong, they become a strangle strap. You know, and you see a lot of the strangle straps out there.
So the point I want to make is that for you, it's a small, slight, very, very low added danger. But when it becomes more of a norm for people to have these things, if they don't properly use them, it becomes a larger danger.
Yeah, I think like any tool, especially when it comes to whitewater, if you're not willing to put in the time to know how to use the tool, it's always going to be of greater risk to you.
Yep.
And sort of on the same principle we're talking about, you know, one of the things he mentioned was like having carabiners hanging off your life jacket. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, especially like non-locking, you know, or just regular open gate carabiner kind of things. And a carabiner is a super useful tool to have. A carabiner hanging off your life jacket is like shockingly dangerous. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of the same thing. Like it's the tool itself is not necessarily the issue. It's how you use it and, you know, how you store it and all those kinds of things that can then turn it into being dangerous.
So the thing I like about the Clean Land Principle is it's pretty hardcore. It's like, hey, do these very hardcore things, but hopefully, and right now people are doing things that are kind of sketchy out there. And hopefully it moves the sketchy people towards the safer thing.
Yeah.
That's what I'm really excited about. Like, you're right. Like having the tow tether in your example is useful for you. but maybe other people should rethink whether they have tow tethers or not, or at least if they have them, tighten them up or get better ones. And the clean land principle and these discussions we're having bring us to a safer place where people aren't using carabiners that are non-locking, or at least or they're making sure they lock them if they're hanging up a life jacket.
Yeah. I think that's the main thing, is you sit down and it's not necessarily the right and wrong, but you should be sitting down to ask the questions of what are the potential negative consequences of this setup, you know? And I think the carabiner one I always come back to, because it just, like, looking at it, it feels so like, just hanging a carabiner off my life jacket, like, what are the odds that this ever gets hung up on something? Yeah. And yet twice I have personally watched people's, like, carabiners on their life jackets get caught, like, clip them onto something that they had no intention of being clipped onto.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Like, it actually does happen. It's unbelievable what it does, but it totally happens, and it can be really, really scary really, really fast.
Yeah.
I think that's sort of the point of the principle, is like, these things, the likelihood that these things get hung up or caught or whatever is really low, but when they do, it can go from, you know, a non-life-threatening scenario to an incredibly life-threatening scenario instantly.
And there's really...
So those are good questions to ask. I really like sort of the concept of the principle. One thing that got me thinking about, you know, as you talk about, like, your boat, you know, about having, like, throw bags hanging next to you and that kind of stuff, that all sounds well and good when you're talking about, like, you know, your paddle raft setup. It becomes a significantly bigger question when you start talking about, like, your gear boat setup, and how you rig your gear boat in a way that makes it, you know, where there's nothing you could potentially ever get snagged in.
It's almost impossible to rig your gear boat where nothing gets snagged. It's just like, you can do a better job. You can do the best you can, but there's always straps that you just almost can't get away from.
Yeah.
Or the giant metal thing attached to the boat. Like, there's a lot of things.
The frame. Yeah. The frame.
Exactly. Yeah.
We were put in for the Middle Fork last spring, and there's a female river guide who was doing a private trip who we knew, and her boat was just full of strangle straps everywhere. It was crazy. And we were talking, we're like, hey, are you sure this is safe? She's like, hey, you know what? This is probably the most dangerous boat ever, but whatever. Like, she just was like, I get it. It's like that thing you're pointing out is not the biggest danger on this boat. That's just how I'm rolling.
Yeah. That's funny.
I wish I remember the exact quote.
That's good. I think something that can go along well with the clean line principle, like, I'll set it up this way. As with most things, you have to set, like, a pretty stringent baseline for the lower scale of skill or competence and be like, these are the rules. Once you move up the scale in competence, like, you know when those rules make sense and when those rules can be altered. And I think the question that that paddlers should ask themselves, especially in the middle to higher range of competence and ability, is like, is what I'm doing, does that make sense? Like, having a carabiner on the outside of your life jacket, is there a reason why I'm doing that? Like, is there going to be is there a scenario where I'm going to need to immediately grab a carabiner, or does it make more sense to just have it in the pocket of my life jacket? Because in reality, if I'm using a carabiner, I'm probably going to have 30 seconds to grab it. And asking questions like that, which goes to the same, like, whitewater rescue training principles of, like, everyone, when they take their first whitewater rescue class, is super stoked to bring out a Z-drag, like, every single time something happens. And then the more you start doing it, you're like, does this actually make sense? Or can I just, like, push it off the rock with my foot?
No, don't push it off. I get to practice my skills.
Yeah. I mean, you see that at the fish ladder all the time. It's hilarious. But sometimes it's necessary. But I think just, like, going through that process of thinking, and, like, people that haven't thought about it before, maybe go into your garage and, like, put on all your gear and, like, look at it and be like, does all this make sense? Is there anything here that is unnecessary or would potentially cause more harm than good, or just like doesn't need to be here at all. And going through that methodology and like critically thinking about why it is you're doing what you're doing.
And I think as an experienced boater, like the two of you are, you both are setting examples for other people. So what the two of you do, other people that are watching, and they're going to mimic. And so I think that you guys both know enough to make your own decisions about these things. But I think we also have to realize other people are going to do what you do, whether it makes sense for them or not. So if you have a bunch of carabiners on your PFDs as leaders in the industry and Eric with your company, people are going to see you with a bunch of carabiners and be like, I need to be more like that without knowing why they're doing it. So I think that we need to be careful. People who are experienced and veterans and seen as leaders need to be careful what they do because they're setting an example for the newer people. And going on the carabiners too, I'm not a big fan of carrying carabiners in my life jacket because I really care about flotation. I want as much flotation as I can, and carabiners are decrease the flotation of your PFD.
I was actually going to bring that up. I'd like to talk to somebody who knows like a lot about that because that's never made a whole lot of sense to me. Like, I mean, yes, right? Carrying metal things on your life jacket.
I know a lot about it.
Essentially, sea anchors are counterproductive to floating. Right?
I know like a lot
more
about
weight,
it because I
more
studied
weight
science.
Equals bad. Okay, there you go. So you can help us.
Yeah.
More weight equals bad. But if you have a life jacket with 16 pounds of flotation and you're putting a like 5 ounce carabiner in it.
It has 5 ounces less of flotation.
Right. What realistic difference does that actually make?
I want
like how is that any different than my shoes?
Flotation.
You know, or like
because you have
or
to
the extra amount of water I drank today.
Every little I want flotation. Like first of all, a 16 pound flotation PFD to me is actually kind of scary. It's the minimum amount of flotation. So I want to try to have PFDs that have more like 18, 19. But I personally want every bit of flotation I can. And I know there's people out there that say, oh, you know what? I when I get worked in holes, I want to be able to swim to the bottom. I don't agree with that. You, when you're swimming, you want to have your head up as high above water as you can.
I'm going to disagree. Well,
of course
I think
you
in
are,
general,
Priscilla.
Yes. Well, so I'll bring two examples. Getting stuck in Bob's hole on the
Bob's Falls. I know Bob's Falls is coming up.
Oh yeah. And also on Bridge Creek in California that goes into Woolly Creek. Ugh. Both times were times where like my flotation was totally fine, my head was above water, but I like could not get out of the scenario, and both times were probably two of the more scary swims I've ever had. And if I, like, you know, some of it, of course, is user error. Like, I could have done things better to get out of there or just not swam in the first place. But, like, Bob's, like, if you don't go deep, you're never getting out. Like,
well, you are when your head's above and your hands can be above and someone throws you a rope and pulls you out.
Right.
Which is only going to happen if you're above the water.
Yeah. But if you, like, go deep, and we're not talking about, like, high water truss or anything like that. If you go deep, you pop out in the pool and someone gets you a rope, or you can swim over to the side, or the eddy gets you over to the side again. And that's like a better scenario, just having been there and been stuck in the hole for a while. And then also with the Bridge Creek example, like being stuck in a weird eddy and not going deep, like just it resulted being like super scary. And if I'd just gone deep, I would have popped up and been in like a pretty calm pool, and there wouldn't have, like, it wouldn't even really be a swim that was marked on my radar.
But you can still go deep with flotation. It's not like a couple extra pounds of flotation are keeping you from going deep. Going deep just means you go into the water, the incoming water, and just gets pulled down. My opinion is that flotation is really good, and I want as much flotation as I can when I'm swimming, and carabiners just take a little bit of that away. And everything does. You're right. Everything could, but shoes do too. Although shoes float, so they probably help with flotation. And I know, Priscilla, I know some people disagree that they want less flotation for some reason. My opinion is flotation is good.
Yeah. Well, I like the flotation I have with my green jacket, but I don't think I'd want more because I have like, you know, the old school life jackets.
You wouldn't want more because they would make the PFD more uncomfortable. Or because you want to be able to go deep in places like Bob's Hole?
I think both. And I think some of your argument, Zach, like you're a taller guy. Yeah. So I think some of your argument is coming from someone that maybe, like, you know, if you're to scale the, like, weight to float ratio of a person, you might be experiencing something that, like, I don't experience with a life jacket. Because maybe with the extra flotation that you want, it puts you at the same experience that I have with just, like, a normal life jacket. So I think with larger, taller, or, like, more muscular people, like, Eric, do you remember that one kid that was so muscular that we had to, like, put two life jackets on him?
It was, I do remember that kid. It was the strangest thing I've ever seen. Like, I've never seen somebody who didn't float like this guy. Like,
yeah,
he was the least buoyant human being I've ever met.
It was crazy.
He floated, like, lower than others.
Like, the life jacket just wasn't enough for him. So I think if you're turning it into, like, an equation, you have to take into account, like, the person's weight to the amount of flotation needed. And I know a lot of rafters that wear the higher float vest because they're, you know, they weigh like 30, 40 pounds more than me. If I were to wear that life jacket, it would be absurd and really uncomfortable. And I don't think I'd like it very much, but they're probably experiencing the same amount of perceived flotation or actual flotation as I would with a normal life jacket.
We should get a life jacket person on to talk about this. I do like carrying carabiners in my life jacket. I also carry, like, two sets of prusik cord. Just because there's been scenarios where it's like, we're trying to pull a kayak out of somewhere and somebody throws me a throw rope. And if I have a carabiner to just, like, clip to the loop at the end and then attach to the boat, you know, if I'm hanging off of a rock or something while I'm trying to clip it, like, life is way easier than if I have to deal with, like,
Eric, we're losing you right
now.
Line
at me with a carabiner. Well, my internet can be a bit wonky.
You're back.
Moral of the story is I like having a carabiner because there's times where it can be really helpful, sort of like while you're out in the scenario if you already have the stuff on you.
Yeah. I usually like to carry like one or two carabiners because you have the carabiner. If you have a tow tether, you already have the one carabiner on your tow tether that's the quick access one. And then having the additional one, like, for me, a lot of the trips that we do are, like, hiking, and you have to lower a boat. And for the group, like, just having an extra carabiner to attach to a rope or whatever is great. And this is another controversial topic, but having, like, a carabiner attached to one end or the other of the throw bag, maybe that's a good idea. Maybe it's not. But if you don't, having that extra carabiner available, like, in your life jacket is good if you need to lower a boat or, wrap around a tree and clip it or something like that. You can always use knots, but, I mean, carabiner's just so much easier and quicker.
So I've always used knots, which is, you're right, the carabiner's quicker. Based on this Cleanland Principle talk I've been having, I now put a carabiner in my PFD, so I'm totally into having a carabiner. Yeah. But you know, you guys have seen people with the PFDs that are worn out. They have a huge knife on it, three carabiners. They have pulleys in their PFD. That life jacket, if you put in the water, barely floats on its own.
Yeah,
and so that's fair. I think that I'm kind of being a little bit too on one side, like too much of a safety squirrel. I think that like we should just be aware. Like our PFDs and life jackets need to provide flotation. And so it's just considerations. Like, if you add too much metal to it, all of a sudden it doesn't provide flotation and keep your head above water enough if you swim. And if you went unconscious, you want your head as much above water as you possibly can.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, I think it goes back to sort of the same thing we were talking about a little bit ago, is that, you know, look at the circumstances that you're going to be in and choose your gear accordingly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like, there's certain trips where there's absolutely no benefit to having pulleys and all that stuff in your life jacket. You know, like big high water trips on big rivers with big boats, like, you don't need three little pulleys in your life jacket. So take that stuff out. You know, just think about what you're doing and pick your gear accordingly. And it's all a balancing act of cost benefit. So, well, I think we've kind of hit the clean line principle.
Yeah.
I have one more question.
Yeah.
And then we'll be done. Priscilla, when I paddled with you guys last spring, I didn't have a tow tether with me. Is that something you noticed? Like, ooh, man, Normally, our crew has a tow tether, or make well, but we'll let Zach come with us, even though he's not rocking a tow tether. Or do you not notice that at all?
I think I generally like notice what people's equipment is just inherently, and I think if anything registered in my head, it was like, oh, if one of the IKs gets away from us, Zach probably wouldn't be able to get it quickly.
Yeah.
But it was more like if that thought happened with Jacob or I, it was probably more of like a subconscious thing versus like, oh, Zach's not cool or like he's not skilled. I think it's just like, you know, noticing what people's contributions to the group is, including like what type of gear they have, is something that we generally just noticed, so that like, you know, we wouldn't ask you to chase a boat if we had noticed that you didn't have a tow tether. Like, you know, if something's gotten away, Jacob would probably say, Priscilla, go get that boat, versus Zach, go get that boat. Yeah. If we had noticed that.
So I have multiple PFDs. One of them has a tow tether, but I only use that one when I'm being paid to safety kayak in some role. So if I'm at work in a kayak, I wear that PFD. But why? When I go, because I have a responsibility to help with unconscious swimmers. So I found that the best use of the tow tether is to pull unconscious swimmers ashore. So I have a responsibility because I'm being paid in that that moment to help unconscious swimmers or potentially bring a kayak to shore. But it's more for me about the unconscious swimmers. When I'm paddling for fun with friends, I don't wear a tow tether. I have a different PFD that I wear then. And because there's a slight chance to get caught, but I also, that tow tether's annoying to me. It's always in my way. You know, or I have to connect that life jacket, I have to undo the tow tether every time. So it's kind of a laziness thing too. So now you have me rethinking, maybe I should be, when I'm kayaking, wear the tow tether more.
Yeah. Well, I think something that Jacob and I talk a lot about on trips is, are you going to be an asset or a liability? And I think not having a tow tether in some scenarios where there's a possibility of someone, you know, swimming and their boat going downstream because mm-hmm. you weren't able to corral it, that puts people more in the liability part of the spectrum, because then the group as a whole has to deal with someone not having a boat, having to hike out if that's even a possibility, or having them swim down rapids when they could have just had someone corral their boat. So I think along with like thinking about, does this gear make sense to have on this trip, people should think about if they are contributing to the group with their gear and skill set and outlook and being more on the asset part of the scale, or if by not bringing something, are they just going to be in their boat or on the shore and unable to contribute in a rescue scenario? Mm-hmm.
We had a swimmer on the hood a few weeks ago, high water, and I don't think anybody had tow tether. And so that boat went a few miles and then the paddler just hiked out. I mean, it was pretty obvious, like, we're not going to get the boat to shore. So I was like, hey, have a nice hike out. And then a couple people chase it down for a few miles.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think, like, you know, in some scenarios, there's like, you're not going to be able to get the boat. You can do your best. But I think personally, I'd rather be in a scenario where I have all the tools that could put me in the best position possible. That, you know, again, thinking about, like, does it make sense? I don't want to have a giant bag full of tools, but just the minimum amount of tools that put me in the best position possible to respond when something bad happens, versus thinking later on the trip and being like, oh man, like if I just had this tool, then this guy wouldn't have had to swim this rapid or hike out of the canyon or, you know, X, Y, Z.
Okay. Next time we paddle, I'm going to have my tow tether life jacket. I'll be Woo! Ready.
Awesome. Maybe I'll swim for you, Zach.
Well, it's more likely I'll swim for you, actually. But
cool.
Look at Zach becoming an asset.
Woo! I'll get there someday.
Moving up the scale.
Yeah. Sweet. Let's move on to gear of the week.
Yeah.
So, my gear of the week is... Canyon Coolers just announced recently that they're coming out with their Navigator after like years of the planning and the process. Like, I've been waiting for like two summers for these coolers to come out. It's there. If you've ever seen there, was it the Spectre or something? It's there. The Spectre is like their 105 size, but like really rafting designed cooler. And the Navigator, I think, is the 155, you know, the more like long trip, like small commercial size.
Like gearboat
size. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's not going to fit in a 14 foot boat, most likely, but it, you know, you got a 16 or an 18 foot boat, that size cooler. And when it comes to like rafting specific coolers, that series, the Spectre and now the Navigator, are, in my opinion, the two best coolers ever designed for a raft frame.
Really?
Like the way they're designed to sit on the frame, strap into the frame, like you can strap them into the boat and still open the lids. Like they're bomber. And they hold ice, you know, longer than most Yetis, I think, from the, you know, you watch those online, like the YouTube, like ice videos. Mm-hmm. But from the ones I've seen, they're certainly as good as the Yetis and very arguably better. I have the Spectre and it kind of beat the snot out of it, and it's just like bomb proof, holds ice well. They've got all sorts of cool features. I love them.
Awesome. Did the Canyon
to see the big one finally come out is really nice.
Did Canyon come first, or in terms of that style of cooler? Like, were they the first? Like, who was the first to create that design? In my head, like, Canyon makes sense because of like ditch rafting, but I don't know.
So I unplugged my headphones on accident, so I lost part of your question.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, like, which brand of that cooler came first? Was Canyon, like, the first one?
No, I think Yeti was before Canyon. I mean, I remember when the Canyon guys were, like, selling these out of the back of their truck coming through Southern Oregon.
Nice.
And we bought one of their little ones, like, that back then. It was, like, 8-9 years ago, maybe even longer. And we use it literally every day of the summer. On our nugget trips, and the thing is still running strong, and we beat the living snot out of it. And it, you wouldn't know. Like, we replaced one latch on it, and it was like the early ones that aren't nearly as good as the new ones. So
nice.
I've been impressed, and the price on them is good. You know, for a big roto-molded cooler, like, their prices are awesome. They're good dudes to work with, but the design on that series is really, really good. I've really been impressed.
You're not buying Yeti coolers because they're better. You're buying it because of the brand. It's the reason you're buying Nikes over K-Swiss.
No, not either, but yeah.
I'm sure the Canyons... Okay, we're not getting into what shoes you wear. But, like, you're not buying Canyon coolers because they're cool. You're buying them because they're better and they cost less.
Yeah.
I mean, you're buying a Yeti because it's a brand and it sends an image.
Sure. Well, I mean, I assume they also probably make some pretty good coolers.
They're good, but I think all the other cooler manufacturers have shown they're the same as everything else.
When it gets to that roto-molded stuff, I think from a basic standpoint of like holding ice, I think you're right. Like, most of them are on a pretty even playing field. Where they really set themselves apart is hinges, latches, handles, and, you know, from a rafting standpoint, how they fit into your boat. You know, the shape of them, the strap down points, like all that kind of stuff. That's really where you start setting yourself apart.
The Yetis, they never designed those for rafters, so they don't. They have awkward sizes that don't really fit in rafts.
That's totally right. And these Canyon ones were designed around a raft frame. Yeah. Like, you just look at them, you can tell. They're sweet. So,
cool.
I'll go next. So, this is not quite gear, but it's something of the week. This whole danger ropes thing has just, like, as strangle straps, I just see them everywhere. I was paddling to win last week, and I just saw two class 5 boaters with sketchy ropes on their boats. And everywhere I go, I see strangle straps and danger ropes. And I've been telling people, I'm going to start an Instagram called Danger Ropes just to point out how often I see this. I mean, I've been saying this for, like, 6 months, and I finally just did it. Because I see, I want to document the crazy ass dangerous ropes I see in the real world. So
public shaming.
No, because I'm not saying whose boat it is.
Okay.
I'm not having people smile next to it. I'm just, now that every time I see one, instead of shaking my head in disgust, I'm going to take a photo of it and add it to Instagram and make myself happy. And hopefully start more discussion on dangerous ropes hanging off boats. And I'm not perfect. I'm sure I have strangle straps somewhere on my boats too, but I need to do something like this. So my gear of the week is the new Instagram handle Danger Ropes.
Nice.
Sweet. All right, Priscilla, do you have gear of the week?
Yeah. So mine is socks, but more specifically smart wool socks. Just ordered, I think, 3 pairs for, well, I guess 6. So 3 for Jacob, 3 for me. And one was, I think it's called the Mountaineering. It's like the thickest sock, which I totally thought was going to be way too thick for like a dry suit. And for winter paddling, I'm someone that gets like super cold all the time. It's just like the best sock in the world. It's so comfy and it actually keeps my feet warm. And then, like, you know, since it's wool, it can actually get damp and still insulate, and dries out pretty quickly. So anyone that has somewhat of a leaky dry suit, it's, you can just wring it out and kind of hang it and it'll still keep you somewhat warm. And then they're like next level down is like some trail sock, is a good like medium spring boating, in the Northwest type of level of insulation, but I'm super stoked on them. And, I've been wearing the thick ones pretty much like every day I've been boating since I bought them. So several months now, and which is around the point that I think other socks start to get holes from like hiking and stuff, and they're still good as new. So highly recommend Smart Wool.
I don't think I've put my dry suit on in probably 10 years without a pair of Smart Wool socks.
Nice.
Like I'm with you. I love them. And I have pairs. I'm not wearing them right now. Yesterday, I think I was wearing a pair of Smart Wool socks I bought like 18 years ago.
Oh, and wow.
Wear all the time. Like they're bomb proof. They're really, yeah. They're a little expensive for a pair of socks, but it's a super solid investment.
You either buy like 6 cheap socks or 1 Smart Wool sock.
I wear it for 6 days.
Yeah. No problem. Exactly.
Do you wear these outside of boating, or these are just for boating?
I wear mine for everything.
Yeah.
I don't wear the thick ones for hiking because they kind of like scrunch up and can give you blisters. But the other, like the mid-weight ones, I wear for hiking and for work and just like general winter in the Northwest.
Yeah, I wear Smart Wool socks now like probably 4 days a week, at least 5 days a week here in the snow. Like, because I've got, you know, 3 feet of snow.
Yeah,
so I wear them all the time, just for, like, around the house when I'm, you know, wearing my snow boots or going outside to snowplow the driveway or go get the mail or whatever. Like, they're my daily socks in the winter.
Yeah, great house socks, too.
Mm-hmm. Good socks. Awesome. Well, on that note, as you think about your gear, get rid of all that loose stuff that's hanging off your life jacket. Buy yourself some Smart Wool socks, get a new cooler, and check out Zach's new page on Instagram where he mocks people.
I'm not mocking people. There's no mocking. I do not want to be that guy. I'm simply helping share pictures of dangerous rope configurations with the world.
Yeah.
In a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm excited.
The same way Jerry of the Day is positive, right? Which it sort of is, I guess.
It totally is.
Awesome. Well, hopefully you're heading out and going boating or coming home from an awesome day on the river and needed something to listen to. Tell your friends about us. Rate us on whatever you listen to, because apparently that's good. And come back next week to hear whatever it is we have to say then. Have a great week on the rivers.